Welcome to Self-Directed. We are your hosts, Cecilia and Jesper Conrad. And now it's time to welcome this week's guest.
All right. Today we are together with Sam King Davis. And if you haven't heard of him, you should go and check out the podcast interview we did with Sam. We met him on the bridge in Prague, where he was sitting and making wonderful caricature drawings of people. And I remember walking away after chatted a little with him and was like, I want to know more about what kind of job is that? How do you work with the crowd? And what is going through your mind when you are working in as a street artist like that? And Sam was so kind to share his thoughts with us. And it's a wonderful episode. And we will link to it in the show notes. But then I actually got an email from Sam where he was like, oh, but I also feel I have a lot of questions to you guys. Can we do a reverse podcast where I get the chance to ask you guys a lot of questions? So here we are. And first of all, after a long introduction, welcome, Sam. It's good to see you again, my man.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
Yes. Hi.
And then I don't know where to start. Maybe you have...
Throw the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have like a whole bunch of questions. I think the first thing that always comes up, because you guys inspired me, I had an idea that I might want to do some alternative education for our kids and stuff. But you guys inspired me to, I had never even heard the term unschooling. I've heard of homeschooling, of course. But when I bring it up to people, it always happens like this. I say it. And then there's this. And then the first question is, well, then how are you going to socialize them? Yeah. And so, and that was actually one of Kate's questions too. So I think maybe we can just start there, because I'm sure that based on my experience that you guys are getting that question a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's one of two main questions. Will they ever learn to read, and how do you socialize them?
Really? That's an honest question.
The other one is, okay. So the social life of unschooled children looks very different from the social life of schooled children, obviously, as the baseline is not that we take them and leave them with some complete strangers in a confined group of something between 20 and 30 other kids that they have not chosen to spend all day with, but they will have to spend all day with. That is the baseline of a school child, and you can have an opinion on that if you want. An unschooled child does not have that baseline. And of course, the reality is that a lot of the other kids are in there in the school. So if you go to the park on a Tuesday at 11 in the morning, there are not many kids around. And it could, for the first... How is that? When you first look at it, it could look pretty hard to find a social life for an unschooled child. But really what happens is that the social life is so much more complex than the artificial way we do it with schools. A real social life for a real child in the real world has always been growing up around things that happens in a real life, around people getting older, around parents working, around younger siblings, cousins, neighbors. It has never in the history of humankind been normal for a child to grow up around 20 people their own age all day. And I think we have to take a step back from that and remember this is not a necessary baseline that they have this group of so-called peers that they grow up with, more or less the same group. It's actually just something we came up with a few hundred years ago. And if you look at it, it's not a pretty picture. A successful school has less than 20% kids getting mocked every day. What's that? That's one in five feeling like shit. It's not, I don't see it as the social life in the schools is a very complicated thing as well. And very often it fails. Very often it makes the kids feel horrible. So, we're not taking them away from paradise when we take them out. we're removing them from something that might go well and might go not so well. Mm-hmm. And then we remove them into a reality where, in your case in Prague and in our case in Copenhagen, it's a reality with not many other homeschooled children. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to California, you almost fall over them in the street. But if you're in Europe, it's different. And what I usually also say is, well, then that's the job. Then that's what you work for. So you don't have to get up every morning, make sure they're ready at 8 o'clock with a packed lunch and a backpack and you know, somewhat clean clothes and the homework done. Mm-hmm. What you do instead is sometimes you spend 2 hours commuting to hang out with some friends because it's more scarce. But of course, they are there. It's not like there are no other homeschooled children in Prague. There's actually quite a few, as far as I know. And it's also, I mean, that's just what you do. And one of my favorite stories is a friend of mine who called me back when we lived in the bus in Spain. And she said, can we come over next Tuesday and to hang out for a bit? And I said, yeah, sure. That would be lovely. She's my friend and her kids are friends with my kids. And that would be lovely. It's just, you know, where are you? Because I'm in Barcelona and I happen to know that she lives in Normandy, France, which is 1,500 kilometers away. Oh, and wow. She said, I'm home. And I was like, oh, so you're driving 1,500 kilometers for a play date. That's actually what you're proposing. And she said, yeah, kind of. That happens. And we invited her.
You get a pilot license. Just fly there. Get a pilot license and just fly there. Yeah,
well, this is the extreme. And I'm sure you'll find friends much closer. There's more to that story. It's not complete nonsense.
Do you feel like that maybe the question, how am I going to socialize the kids, is kind of a moral cover-up for the question, what the hell am I going to do with my kids all day long?
Could be.
Like, because when I think about it, like, I know the first objection from Kate was like, I don't want to be, it's already too much. Like the time that we have, because we have her in kindergarten, like half days, Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. and like international kindergarten. But like even that little bit of time, I think that Kate couldn't. It's a lot.
I can answer that. And Cecilia, I know she can probably explain it better than I can. But the child you get home from an institution, we have tried it. We have had our kids in kindergarten. But the child you get home from a school or a kindergarten, it's not the same kind of child that you wake up with every day. And what I mean by this is, if you are 4 years old and you are together with 25 other people, and have you tried working in a kindergarten? I have. The amount of sound going on just is stressful. All the people running around is stressful. Mm-hmm. And all the activities going on. And you're only 4 years old and you need to navigate this system. So when you mm-hmm. come home, you are drained. And you probably have some reactions inside of you. And mm-hmm. the people that you have to take those reactions out on is in some sort of dialogue with your parents. Mm-hmm. And it is a really stressed child you get home when they have been away.
Sometimes.
That's really fair. Yeah.
But the gardens are really nice. And
of course, but I'm just saying that if you take, it's also the same with the social life. If you take the word apart and just like, okay, you say socialize, let's look at what's actually going on. Then my favorite question to ask is, so Sam, how would you like it to hang out with 27 other people your age, which you haven't chosen to be together with for 8 hours?
Every day mm-hmm. for 10 years.
You are not allowed to go to the toilet. You cannot eat when you want to and stuff like that. That is the confinement.
And you have to do half of the homework that you don't want to do. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But just think about, this is what we have called social life. But if we try to unpack it and say, but what kind of social life is it actually?
It's really like a water cooler, like social life, like in an office, you know? It is. It's like you get an hour break. That's your recess. You get an hour break at work, a lunch break.
Yeah.
You got to
And
come
I've
back
had
and do the
great
work, you know.
water breaks with friends where we have stand and take a cup of tea or something, and or people who ended up becoming friends. But I've also had workplaces where I was sitting at lunch and just needed to get the time going. And I don't do sports at all, interest in sports or politics. So sitting at lunch trying to communicate with people was really sometimes horrible for me because I wanted to talk about other stuff. And they were not there, you know. So it's the same with the kindergarten. That is not also social life. And I think we sometimes come to think about social life as, oh, I see my child is playing. That means they have a social life. But what else should you do if you are put in a place you need to be for 7 or 8 hours until you're picked up? Why not get the best out of it? But as I tried to say before, often you have used a lot of time and energy. And the parent who have been out working has the same. So when you come home, the child needs to reconfirm its connection with its parents. Yeah, you're better. Cecilia is way better at explaining this.
Talking about different things. One thing is, how will it look for the parent? Do they need the break? Can they take the task on? Another thing is the socialization, which we have to break up in different things. So it becomes very quickly very complicated because socialization is a big thing, actually. It's about how do we manage being in the world? How do we handle our near and close relations? How do we handle being polite and nice when we are at the library, let's say? There's so much going on there. So let me start with the other one, and that's where Jesper sort of talked himself to, is the attachment. So children are supposed to be attached to their parents. That's how it works. And if they are not, all kinds of things can go wrong. So baseline for a healthy psychology is that you have a healthy attachment to your parents. Usually it's more the mother than the father, but that doesn't really, in my opinion, matter. What happens when we leave our child at kindergarten? The younger they are, the more hardcore it is, but we break that attachment every morning. Or we heard it, at least. The child is safe and secure with you. They know you've got their back, and then you leave them. And that's actually not a natural thing for a mammal to do. And then we come back and pick them up, and we have to repair that little damage we made in the morning. I'm not saying we're driving our kids insane. I'm just saying we're doing something that's actually not normal, and it needs some repair work. And on the child's side, that looks like being very possessive or reacting a lot or just being needy, or, you know, they're like, show me you've got my back. You just took it away from me. Now I need it back. And that's a very healthy reaction in whatever way it looks. For the parent, it can feel very draining. It's not nice. You just have to put in a lot of emotional work and affirmation. And maybe you don't know that that's what's going on. So you're just annoyed. You can tie your shoes yourself. Why do you ask me for the water? I'm not sitting down watching that stupid show. I have other things to do. You can watch that show alone. All those reactions are from the frustrated parent feeling you're pushing me too much. But actually, it's just the child asking for that attachment to be stabilized and harmonic again. That work is hard work. And if you don't leave your child in the morning, that work disappears.
So, that makes sense. So it's
some of
like
that, can I do that? Do I have the energy for it? Well, it's a different task if you have your child all the time, if you stop giving them away to strangers in the morning.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Cecilia. We're interrupting our own podcast just to make sure that you know that I am available if you want to talk to someone who has lived the unschooling life, who has traveled the world, who has beat cancer, who has been the mother of four amazing children. Luckily, I still am the mother of four amazing children. I know about life when it's hard. I know about life when it's complicated. I know what you need is probably most of all someone who will understand the special world that you are in as an unschooling parent. Even with your trauma and your personal history getting in the way, What I do really is to be a loving support, a rock. And I do it on the base that I am a trained psychologist. I have worked with a lot of people with a lot of different situations. I am so ready to be your support, the one that you need to get some confidence and be strong in your journey as an unschooling parent. So don't hold back. I give a 20-minute conversation for free. You can talk to me on the phone or in a video call and just see if it's a match. If you want to connect, you can find me on social media or find me on my website, ceciliaconrad.com. If you're a Danish speaker, I have a Danish website, ceciliaconrad.dk, and we can find those 20 minutes and see how it goes from there. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, you don't drain that emotional gas tank. You don't have to fill that back up again. Yeah.
When my kids were small, I actually sometimes was like, can we do something together? I'm sort of bored doing the dishes and reading my email all the time. I want to hang out. But they were absorbed in their own stuff. So, but it takes some time before that changes. This is my main point about this question that you raised. The other thing is that, well, it is a big job to be a parent. If you don't have anyone to look after your kids for you, you're going to have to do it yourself. And that's a 24/7 job for about 20 years per child. So yes, that is a big task. Sometimes I want to say something down the line of suck it up and do it. It's your child. You have that job. It's your job. And maybe in some phases of life, there will not be a lot of space for showers and yoga and whatever, because the children are so need you so much, especially when they are small, obviously, when you breastfeed and you don't sleep at night and all these things. It is what it is. But mm-hmm. life is long. And in my experience, that feeling of just not having a moment for yourself and not having a moment for the work processes that you want to do or personal development, education, it calms down after a while. You just have to get used to it. And the kids have to get used to it and they have to start doing their processes. And you have to be able to see, navigate that field. Oh, now they're starting that, whatever, Lego. And I know I'll have about 2.5 hours if I just show up with a sandwich on the half mark. And then you know that and you can do the shower and the yoga and the emails.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But sometimes you don't have that. I mean, sometimes there will be weeks where you just want to pull your hair out.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Kate had a lot of really good questions. I'm just going to go through hers because they're kind of the same as mine, I guess. I think some of these will probably be pretty easy. Like, how do you ensure that the child achieves the educational requirements of your country? So that would be my question. Like, in addition to that would be basically like, how do you make sure that they have the requirements if they decide they want to go to college? Because I guess you would just have to pass certain tests and make sure that they're up to speed.
Yeah, in Europe, you have to pass tests. So at the end of the day, that problem is a problem you have when the child is about 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just talk to the child at that point.
Yeah.
And if the motivation is to go to college, then, I mean, a 15-year-old can sit down and do whatever, study, do some entry exams and be ready for it. What I've seen in the unschooling world is that's what they do. If they want to go to college, they sit down, do the work, and then they go to college. But you don't have to push them for 10 years before that.
No, and also, if I can answer a little about that, about how people learn, then I presume you know from yourself that if you are inspired to learn something new, then you wouldn't function very well if you only got 45 minutes to immerse yourself into it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are lucky, 1.5 hours. So this is one of the challenges the school system has today, which is that they have spread out the hours of learning in this way, where when you are really passionate about something, you can go all in, and you can go all in for days and weeks. We see it right now with one of our children who is like, hey, I really want to understand all this math. So he is learning everything. And it's like seeing him take 10 years of schooling in just a couple of months. And his brain is happy and he's focused. But the main reason he can do this is he has the interest. He's passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And there comes then, how easy is it to learn if you are forced to learn compared to how easy is it to learn when you want to learn? That said, then I personally see the school system as a placeholder for children for many years. And then a lot of the learning that is actually needed, if you want to go to a college level, you can do from your 12 to your 15. All the years before is more or less just hanging out, making sure that they are somewhere while mom and dad wants to go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it doesn't take that long time to obtain the knowledge when you are passionate about
it. It's just, you don't have to be passionate necessarily, but just if it's voluntary, if the child decides, no, I want to do that, then they will sit down and do it, and they will do it pretty quickly. So, I mean, you asked two different questions, actually. One is how do they learn what they are supposed to learn? And the other one was how do they get into college? And that's two different things. And I think getting into college, you have to get your shoulders down and remember, well, we can start working on that when they're 15. Mm-hmm. We could also start when they are 12, but we don't have to start when they are 6.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's actually not necessary. So, and once you get to that point, you probably have some other unschooling friends. You're in some groups with unschooling parents. You have some general idea. What college is it? What subject is it? If it's languages, maybe, you know, you start working with those areas. But if the kid wants to be a doctor, maybe you start in another corner and you unravel all these academics. But the child will be interested in it and will want to do it. And then the motor will be explosive on that train. So,
and it will be self-directed. It will not be enforced by the parent. It will be the child that see, hey, there is this option over here. I really want that. And an episode you should listen to is one we have made with Jessica Jacobs, who is the founder of what she called Ditch School, where she actually helps people navigate that whole field. Because you can take college in many ways. And you can start, and it is about understanding the system. And as a parent for unschooled or homeschooled child, you get to know more about what is actually needed and what is not needed. You get to read a lot, but the interest grows in also from the parent side.
Yeah.
So there is ways, there are loads of ways, and it is absolutely, as Cecilia says, not something I would worry about at all before I have a child that is at least 12 or 13. So much more important stuff is going on in a child's life.
Even say between 12 and 14, my personal experience is that they need a lot of peace. At that time, leave them be, because so much happens on the inside. That if I came and started pushing for, you know, preparing for college or weird stuff like that, they would just freak out. They need the space. That's another critique we have of the whole curriculum-based childhood being homeschooled or school-schooled, is that the parents have this huge agenda on where the mind of the child has to go and where the working hours, the energy has to go in the child's life. And really moving yourself from being 6 years old to being 16 years old and still be a healthy and happy person at 16, it takes a lot of inner work.
Mm-hmm.
And that inner work, there will be no space for if they have to just do whatever I come up with, learn Latin and dance and whatever. So when they are between 12 and 14, in my experience, is an explosion on the inside. And I wouldn't push for any college preparation. I wouldn't push for college preparation, period. But if I was to push for it, well, I have done it, actually. I've done it a little bit. I've talked to my older kids about, you know, it's a nice card to have on your hand in life, an education. And actually, it's pretty fun to study. So Have you considered getting ready for, you know, just giving yourself that option? Why not? If you're studying math anyway, why not just do the exam and then you're ready for it? I've talked to them about that, and I will totally accept it if they don't want to do it. But I've done it after that explosion that they have at the early teenage years, because they don't need it at that point, really.
Mm. Yeah. So. Mm, that's good. That's a good answer. So many questions here. She's asking about work.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, just a short interruption as I have a small message about some of the things I'm working on. My name is Jesper Conrad. It is my pleasure to invite you to become a less stressed dad. I know how it is to be stressed out. My wife, I had cancer. I have 4 kids and I had a long career and had to like juggle everything at the same time. And it's hard. It's sometimes hard to be a dad. It's hard to be the breadwinner, if that's what you are. That's what I've been in our family, where my wife have been at home with our children. And it takes its toll. And one of the things that really help is to talk with someone else about it. And that is why I've created the Better Dad Institute together with my good friend Martin Cook. And at the Better Dad Institute, we have dad circles where we meet up once a week and just talk about life as a dad, because sharing actually is super, super healing in the process of being a dad. To just hear that someone else is working through the same problems that you are is very, very giving. And if you're into more like a one-on-one thing, then I would happily help you and share my experience of being a dad to 4 wonderful children and having a wonderful relationship with my wife and being a full-time travel dad, how I have juggling everything at the same time, having a career, and how I have learned to get those shoulders down to actually be very happy in my life. Of course, the stress can like pop up, but then I have the techniques I've learned and which I would love to teach you. So reach out at betterdadinstitute.com. And if you want to get directly in contact with me, then it's betterdadinstitute.com/Conrad. I look forward to hearing from you and have fun. And now on with the podcast. And Sam, we can even do one episode more if there's a...
But there's an unanswered question. You asked, how do you make sure your child learns what is required in your country? And in the end, I mean, you have to find out what is required in your country. Some countries, it's completely illegal to homeschool. Some countries, it's very, very free. Some countries have tests every year. So I can't really answer that question because it will differ for all the different countries. But what I would do if I wanted to unschool my child is to find out where are the other unschoolers in this country. And then I would reach out and ask them what they know about the laws and how to move around it as an unschooler, because there's always, well, there's usually a way. In some countries, you actually have to move out, like Sweden, for example. You can't do it in Sweden. But most countries, there are ways around it. And maybe you unschool, which is the principle of, you know, not pushing the child in any academic way. Let them do what feels right for them. But maybe you do it in a context where there is a test every year, and it's math and English, let's say. And you have to talk to your child about, you can have all this freedom, but we live under these laws. And you can't have that freedom if you don't pass that test. I'm sorry, but that's how it is. Just like, you know, when you're out of money, you're out of money. You can't buy a new pair of roller skaters. It's just, you know, I'd like to give it to you, but I can't because we need to eat. So in the same way, sometimes you're just going to have to let your child know this is the reality. We will make sure you pass that test. I will help you. And it's only about the test. It's not about me thinking that you have to learn it. Some families have to do that. And then they have to do that. And then they do it. And then they are happy. It takes about 3 hours work a week and gains a lot of freedom. I mean, all the other hours are free. So, yes. So, but I can't answer the question for your specific situation, obviously, and all the listeners will be in different countries. The other element of how do you make sure they learn what they're supposed to learn can sometimes be more general and be about, you know, and then you have to go on the inside of your own agenda and find out, is there anything you think they are supposed to learn? Do you believe in that narrative that there are things kids are supposed to learn and that you as a parent will fail if you did not secure that they learn that? That's worth a thought. And I don't think we should start talking too much about it because that could take me about 2 hours.
The one thing that I wanted to throw in, I'm sure you've heard this a lot, but I've noticed there's some things that are, that I'm learning about now, right before I turn 40, that I'm learning them. And like every paragraph I read or every insight that I come across, I'm like, why did they not teach me this in high school? Like all of the basics are grade school, you know, like especially emotional regulation, conflict resolution, you know, how to work properly in social groups and be compassionate and how to like regulate my own emotions and all of these things, and also balance my checkbook and invest money properly and take care of my finances properly. Like all that stuff, nobody taught me that. It was all like Civil War history, this and, you know, the piece of Civil War history that we want you to know about, not that other part, not the part that was written by the people who lost, you know, or whatever, you know. So, yeah, I find it's very like, you know, Rockefeller kind of, you know, factory worker based education system. And the stuff that really would help to empower me and really help me to get a good head start in life so I could have that time freedom later on in life or even earlier in life, that stuff is not taught to me. Only the stuff that will keep me like focused on work and more education, academia. So
just a quick one. There's even a greater depth to that. And we have done two great episodes, one with Erica Davis Petra and one with Akilah Richards, who are both strong Black women who unschooled their children. And we had a dialogue about what is it actually you're putting your child into if you are Black in America. Who wrote those storybooks? What are their agenda? How do they look upon it? And the reason I'm just mentioning this part of the story is if there is a curriculum, someone have decided what it is. And you as a parent need to ask yourself if you agree with that curriculum before you outsource the responsibility for your child's well-being to someone else. It's a really big decision to take, actually. And nowadays, I become baffled. I wasn't when I was thinking, oh, we need our kids in school. It was just like, that's how it is. But now, with the knowledge I have today, I'm baffled that people take that decision so lightly, that they say to themselves, oh, yeah, put my kid over here because that's how it is, without asking, what are they want to teach my child? Do I know the people over there? How are they as people? Will my child come emotionally healthy through this episode? The whole learning, whatever you need to learn in life, that can come. I learn stuff every day still. I mean, yeah. What I learned in public school and high school and whatever, it's not what I have created my life upon. Mm-hmm. All that is self-directed. And it is a really big decision to take and say, do I trust the people over here? Do I want to outsource those years of my child's life to someone else?
Yeah, that's very well said. Very well put. I actually did want to ask, like, this is another question I'm sure that you get a lot, but it's like, what type of income situation or like earning situation you guys have seems that it's conducive to this kind of thing. But what about people who are either both working or like in our case, I work 60 hours a week in the summer and 20 hours a week through the winter like that. But basically year round, when you add it all together, I'm full time, you know, more than full time working. So just wondering like how that works out for like, you know, a one full-time parent or maybe both full-time parents, or, you know, how that works for people. Like, do you find that you have more time or you have less time, or what's the...
Well, we all have the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how time works.
Yeah.
It's brutal to say it, but that's how time works. And it's probably the most precious thing that we have. We cannot even try to understand how precious it is, even when we think we know, we don't know. So it looks different in all families. There are so many ways people come up with solutions. We've been fortunate that Jesper has been able to make enough money for us to live off for the entire time. Sometimes we've been wealthy. Sometimes we've been struggling financially. We always felt that the time we have together is the most precious thing we have. So we are willing to go down, not to the last dollar because that's too stressful, but very close. In order to keep at least me and the children free from having to show up at a specific time at a specific place so that the kids can be unschooled. That's how we do it personally. But I have seen many different ways. I've also seen families where at the end you let the children look after each other. You have maybe neighbors, grandparents. You have play groups with other unschooling families where you simply take turns going to the park and give each other some space to work. You start questioning everything once you start unschooling. And at some point, you also question, how much money do I actually need? Is there another way to finance my life? Is there a way my kids could join me at work? Sometimes, not all the time, but, you know, could it work that they were just around? They do grow up. I mean, it's not that they are very small all of the time. I don't think I have a very clear answer, because what I see is just that everyone will find their way. Mm-hmm. I almost died from cancer 13 years ago. And at that point, back when we came out of that and we started unschooling and we had an extra child and that whole process the first few years after the cancer, I realized very clearly that I would rather live in my car than I would go to work. I would rather have my moments with my children, because I was so close to losing everything, to dying from them. It became very clear for me. And now that's basically what I do. I have a very nice car now, a van conversion. So it's nicer than it sounds. But once you get clear on what you really want and what's really important, then the perspective changes. Mm-hmm. We talked to a single mom who had been unschooling, and she said that in the beginning, when she decided to unschool, she couldn't do it because she needed to make money. But what she could do was to sit down and make a plan to see, how can I make this work, and then work on that plan. And it took her a few years, but she did finally arrive at a point where she could take her child out of school. Mm. And he was on board, the son. You know, I'm working for this. I can't do it right now, but I'm not. Now I'm 20% down that road. You know, she did it that way. And I know it's a very unprecise answer, but it really is the reality, that unravel your ideas, question everything, see if you can find a way, see if you can get halfway there. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then from halfway point, once you're there, everything will have changed. So you can make a new plan that might be an easier plan than what you think at this point. The only thing we do know about life is that it changes all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. One of the big changes I had in my life was when we started to take our children home. We did that after Cecilia have had cancer. It felt so wrong to put them to a kindergarten. And I remember I came home and I was a dad who was a lot less stressed. Because it's about how reality changes. Before, I needed to make sure my kids were awake at a certain time every morning, which meant I need to make sure they went to bed at a certain time each evening to get into bed. And then I need to get them ready. Sleepy children who you need to put into like this many, many layers so they can stand the winter in Denmark or Prague when you bike them to wherever they need to be. It's not a happy relationship you have with your child while you're trying to put on a glove or something, you know, and trying to put some food down their throat and so you can get going. And it needs to be quick because dad needs to go to work. It was not fun. But then my reality changed. I didn't need to make the kids ready. The kids could stay up. It meant I had more time with my children in the evening. So even though I was the one going out, going to work, I got so much more quality family time based on that. I had mornings. Sometimes I missed my family in the morning because they slept in late. Why should they wake up when I needed to go to work? So I was quiet, but I also learned to enjoy those mornings. And then I have the whole evening with my children without needing to force them to go to bed because they needed to get up and so I could drive them somewhere so I could be at a place at a certain time. It was so relaxing. And that is one of the big gifts, is that a lot of what you think is normal routines are based upon the fact that you have decided to outsource some of the time you have to with your child to either a nursery home when they're young or a kindergarten or a school. It determines so super much in your life. It determines where you live. It determines which friends you get because you are kind of hanging out with the other parents. It is a very big factor in what goes on in your life. And it is not necessarily one you would choose if you didn't need to do it.
You mean as far as the schooling goes, right? Like
as far as the school, as far as the hanging out with said amount of people you haven't chosen, but the children are there. Would I wake up? Would I wake up my children in the morning if they didn't need to be somewhere? No, I would just let them sleep. Mm-hmm. And the whole part is also if you want your child to go to the same school because you believe that gives a perfect childhood that you go to the same school the whole life, then you are set to live that set time of your life in that area. You're set to make a certain income based on that you wanted to have your child in a school. You maybe even need two incomes because you wanted to have your child in a school.
Yeah, and depending on the school, that's another thing that I didn't even think about, but that kind of helps out, which is like if you're not paying for a private school, then you have that extra money as well. So you need to work less to earn that money that you're...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's expensive here.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
But yeah, the schools that we look at, the more like Montessori or other specialty kind of education schools, that's really expensive. I mean, it's like a whole... It's a rent payment.
I mean,
you know?
Then... But just also, just a quick one, some of the realities about putting a child in school and also what do they then need to have? What are the extra costs? Is there a certain fashion they need to follow to not be bullied and stuff like that? Where if you're just at home hanging out with other homeschooled, you can buy the clothes in secondhand and just be chill. Life is good.
Yeah.
I know Cecilia has a point.
It was more or less the same. It's just you have more control over your... I mean, we have many times been in a situation where we had to pull back on our expenses. But it's easier to do when the kids are not going out every day. Our kids are pretty big now. They are all teenagers. And I'm sure if they had a high school life, they would, quote unquote, need money for going to cafes. They would need more fancy clothing. They would need bus tickets. I mean, even that, we can actually decide. Now we sit down for 2 weeks and we will just study the books we already have, play the board games we already have, eat rice and tomato, look at the sun or the rain and decide to be happy. Listen to music, exercise, whatever we, you know, if you one is juggling and another is doing push-ups, whatever. All these things are free. And the rice and tomatoes are very cheap. And 2 weeks like that, you save a lot of money compared to a normal life with commute and bus tickets and school weekend excursions. You lose a lot of control if you let it out there in the normal life. And I'm not saying we've done the rice and tomato plan many times. Actually, we have only done it once or twice over a more than 10 years period. But it's nice to know that we can do it. And I think Yeah, as I said before, once you start questioning everything, it starts to unravel. And the amount of options you suddenly have that you didn't know you had, it's huge.
Yeah, that's definitely an experience that I'm sure you guys have had. I know I have, it's about commitment. You know, it's like once I change my, like, if there's an option to do a thing, like I want to learn something, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to commit to that for 5 years or 2 years or 6 months or 10 years or whatever. It's like it automatically says no to everything else. And then the path that I choose, things start to kind of magnetize, like this person brings it up, or, you know, social media, the hash networking, social media networking is like feeding my Instagram feed with that. So I'm seeing like other resources, and then, you know, I'm talking about it. So my friends are telling their friends, and then they introduce me to somebody that does this. So it all kind of like automatically kind of aligns, magnetizes in that direction. And partially because it's like saying no to everything else. I can see how that would happen. Like once you make that decision, then it's like the world kind of opens up a little bit. The possibilities open
up. It does. It changes a lot.
And you can always ask yourself, Sam, what's the worst that can happen? The school system is there. They don't go anywhere.
You can just try it out for a few years.
Yeah. I mean,
I would say years.
Yeah.
And even 1 year can be too short to really know how life as an unschooler looks.
Well, I did. We were kind of coming close to the end, but I do have one more question, which is more of a broad one that Kate proposed, which is good. Let's see. What is the benefit of fully unschooling your child? Because there's been some, like when I've brought it up, it was met with an immediate no, because Kate feels like she would be taking the majority of the responsibility of that because I work so much. We talked a little bit about, okay, well, maybe we do like half days or partial kind of, or like, you know, we kind of customize the education. Zelda and our kids still go away at some point, but mainly maybe we do like 50% education at home, stuff like that. So like, I guess the question, what is the benefit to a full unschooling life? If you had like,
how old is your child, Sam?
She's only 2.5, but we plan to have 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, what is it you need to learn when you're 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 years old?
In the long perspective, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The benefit of doing it full time compared to doing it half time. Many unschoolers would say you can't unschool half time, because unschooling is about sending that signal and having that reality for the child that there is no curriculum. Your time is yours. Your motivation is right. If what you want to do is to learn to braid hair, it's just as important important as if what you wanted to do was to learn to read. There's no push. You can do whatever you want, and I will support you in whatever your journey is. That's the most radical unschooling point of view. And it's a philosophy. It's about not putting the child in that situation where there is a curriculum-based idea of whether he or she is doing good enough or not.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, to some extent, be an unschooler who leaves your child in some sort of other people's care situation. But it takes a lot of conflict with the school. And also, you have to be very clear with your child why you're doing it. You have to be in the school because I really have to work, and I don't care what you do. Make the best of your time. Make sure you're not stepping on anyone's toes or making anyone sad, whatever you want to say. I don't care what you learn. I don't care whether you learn or not. I just have to do this because I have to go to work. I'm not even going to look at your results if you bring them home. I'm happy with whatever. That is a feasible way of doing something that comes close But really what will happen in reality is that inside the school, the child will have friends, and those friends will be in that system of, you know, whatever you do, someone is there to tell you whether you did it right or not. And there will be the competition between the children who is doing best. And it's a stretch to call it unschooling. It really is. You can do it for a while. The benefits, I don't think we have. Can we sum it? I don't think we have time. The benefit is that you have a wholehearted person, and that you get to live your life. You get to live your life as a parent. You're not a policeman working for the school system, ensuring that their laws are being followed. You're a real person with real opinions and real emotions and real good days and bad days. As you said before about your own high school experience, that you learned a lot of things that in hindsight, you're like, yeah, they were just teaching me to do what they
or it was just propaganda. I found out later it wasn't true.
Well, whatever. But you get to talk to your kids about the things that you find really important because you'll have the time for it. And the kids get to have their hours on this planet because they actually belong to them. And they get to unfold what they can be passionate about, and they get to make mistakes, and they made them themselves and found out themselves that it was mistakes. It's not like an A, B, or C on the bottom of a piece of paper. It's actually me failing something that I wanted to do. Maybe I should do better next time or adjust my ambition, whatever. So the benefits, well, how can you get your life back? I mean, how can you get your power back?
Also, what you said, you used the word wholehearted, and it's also like when I think about the lessons that I've learned outside of school or by doing an activity or like voluntary participation in like group activities, the lessons are more holistic as well because they're applied to like basically how I'm working with these particular people or this team. And the consequences are there's more kind of complex consequences as opposed to the school system, which is just basically this hour you're here, this hour you're there, this hour you're here. So it's very like artificial. It's like a very artificial environment. So a lot of the lessons have to do specifically with, you know, like we said earlier, something that someone decides that you need to learn. And it doesn't necessarily apply to like everyday life. Because a lot of the lessons that I've learned outside of school have been lessons that I could apply that knowledge to other areas as well. It's not just specifically mathematics or something, you know, like project-based stuff.
The problem is that what you learn in school on a meta level is that you learn that you're not in charge.
Yeah.
It's not up to you to know what's right for you to learn.
Yeah.
That someone else will tell you whether you learned it in a good way or a bad way. Someone else will tell you whether you did well or not. And that will spread to your presence on this planet. Mm-hmm. You will be, if you don't work with it afterwards, somewhat addicted to this appreciation. Did I do good enough? Yeah. Not by your own standards, but by some standard that you need someone to give you a standard and then tell you afterwards whether you met it or not. And that's a very, very unhealthy way to be in your life. We all need to uninstall that. So, well, what's the benefit, you asked? Well, I think that's
the biggest
benefit of being unschooled, that you don't have that.
What do they call it when someone imprisons you and then you become like friends with that person that imprisons you? What do they call that? There's like an effect.
That's the Stockholm syndrome.
It's a little bit like that.
Yeah. There's one recommendation I have.
I'm going to have to just say it on the podcast because I have something else in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
There is unschooling was the term coined back by John Hall so many, many years ago. It is kind of doing a disservice to what all this is about. Now, self-directed learning is growing more and more as a way to talk about it. There is the Alliance for Self-Directed Learning. There's so many cool things out there. Of course, unschooling is doing something. It's defining yourself about what you're not doing. But what this really is that you're kids and yourself will become self-directed in what they choose to do in life. I like that a lot better, but unschooling is just the term.
It's the word everyone knows.
And when you are looking for what you should do in the coming years, you can ask yourself, are we looking for a placeholder, a place we can put our child while we need to do something else that is valuable for us? It can be just making money, or if you're super passionate about doing the work you're doing and don't feel you have time to be together with your child, then that is, you can solve that in another way than putting them to a school. There is, and I can't remember the proper name, if they're called agile learning centers or whatever, you can even create one where it is, hey, here, kids just hang out. There's one or two parents. It is a kind of unschooled paradise. There is absolutely no need for learning, but we are here. We facilitate if they want to learn something. And these are growing and popping up. Again, the States is a wonderful place if you want to go down that road. But people have started to create them themselves in Europe. So I would suggest you look into that.
Okay.
And
I think we have to take a take two.
Yeah. Sam, we would love to answer a lot more of your questions. Cecilia, unfortunately, needs to go, and we are rounding it up. So
it's always interesting to get to talk about these things because we've been doing it for such a long time that I rarely talk about it. But then when you ask me good questions and ask us good questions, and then I feel I still have work to do to become concise in how I explain what this really is. So it's been a very nice conversation. And I think, I mean, if you have a list of questions, I'm up for doing the round two.
If you feel you got any knowledge worthwhile at all.
Well, he gets to say no.
I know. None. No, yeah, it was really good. And I'm definitely interested in doing another one. And yeah, I'll check out the Alliance for Self-Directed Learning. I need to look into it a little bit more, but I think it's important to ask these questions, you know, for people who are interested in it, just because there's kind of like, it reminds me of like when I first came to Europe, I had all of these fears. And then when I was here for like the second week, I realized that 95% of those weren't even real. Like what I couldn't even put a name on them. It was just this overall kind of anxiety and fear. And I think because people are so used to that system, then that like they have those fears, but really if you just shine a light on them, I think a lot of them will kind of melt away. So, yeah. And so I appreciate your time. Yeah.
It's been fun.
That's what we have tried to do today. Shine a light on the fears to remove them. Thanks a lot for your time. We look forward to take two.
Thanks again, guys. Have a great one.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you liked it, then please share it with all your friends and family. We would also love it if you gave our podcast a review. Thanks. And if you want to support our podcast and work, then you can find us on patreon.com/theConrad Family. We will continue to travel full time. And if you want to tag along, then please follow us on Facebook and Instagram @theConrad Family. And you can also read more than 100 blog posts on our website, theConrad.family. Until next time, make a wonderful day. Thank you.